everyone. Hello, hello.
Hello.
Oh, there we go. Welcome, welcome to the Experience Grind Podcast. I'm your lovable host, Kyle.
And I'm Ryan.
Yeah. The Radical Ryan.
Sure.
That's
oh,
what I came up with.
Like
yeah.
That. It sounds like I'm a 90s, you know, like, one-note character.
It's funny. You know, I saw this post. You know, I'd like to go back to the 90s when radical was a good thing. Because now it means radical, like, extremist.
Oh, yeah, I guess so.
it's not used in a good form anymore. So you're
politic grind with...
you're Radical Ryan and the fact that you hate all white people.
Oh, no. Don't put that out on the internet.
You're a self-hating white.
People believe it.
Fart lives matter, yo.
I am a radical against farts.
I am too, man. I'm not the typical guy. I don't enjoy farts.
I'm always like, aloha, ak fart. And we're really going to have to bleep that one out because...
no, ala ak fart, that's fucking great. It's like Admiral ak fart. It's a fart! Ha-ha! See what I did there?
It's a queef! Also, that was the worst Akbar voice.
It was
oh my.
Okay.
This. I didn't know who did it this time.
Yeah.
It wasn't the porn discussion. It was Akbar.
Yeah, you totally derailed us. It's great.
Awesome. Good.
Fuck a derail. They're the best part.
All right. So.
We are the Experience Grind Podcast. Let's bring this thing back in. Let's rope this beast in.
Let's do it.
Where we talk about whatever nerdy bullshit we decide to. We're not set to any means or norms or regulations. None of those were really words, but they flowed. That's what matters.
You had me a little bit full of regulations for about 5 seconds.
Regulations, yeah.
Regulations.
Get on board. I'm very Ricky-esque in that I just make up whatever the fuck I want.
Just do it. Yeah. And I got that reference now.
So we're just, we are working our way through our own list. I would like to reitify that I'm making them up again.
We're going to reitify
that this is not the best list ever available, and that's not what we're trying to make. We decided our favorites.
Yeah.
Our favorite 5 movies, our favorite 5 video games, and we have been working through each other's.
Mm-hmm.
This week, we're landing on your number 2 movie.
It is.
Which is the Kill Bill Saga by Quentin Tarantino. Kill Bill 1 and 2.
Mm-hmm.
I watched them both.
They're good. I'm glad you did.
It's going to be a very... this is a trend I've noticed. Video games, we disagree.
Yes, and that
movies,
trend will continue.
movies, we self-ejaculate together. Like,
well, I think it's because of the movies we picked. Because really, like, most of your movies, with the exception of Fear and Loathing, could have easily been in my top 10, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I like Fear and Loathing quite a bit, too, so that didn't hurt our discussion there. But I think once we get out of our favorite list, I think we'll start disagreeing.
Which is cool. Yeah. But for now, again, these are our favorites.
Yeah.
And we have a very similar taste in movies.
That is true.
Not so much in the games aspect.
Nope. That is becoming pretty clear.
But that makes interesting discussions, and that's fine. But... so do the coefficient movies. Man, I am way too drunk to
What
be...
were you even trying to say?
I don't know,
there?
Man. I don't know.
I just... Translator, ref. what was his point?
We like the same things, and we like the same things about movies, I feel.
Okay. I agree with that. So, yeah. And if there are things like, well, that didn't quite work, I think we're usually pretty like, yeah, yeah.
I agree. That's, yeah, yeah, it did, yeah. Exactly. We're always like, yeah, well, I totally agree. That's the one part that I'm like, that's kind of dumb.
Yeah.
So,
we have a pretty similar taste in movies. So that trend will continue tonight.
So to break this trend, we're not going to have really a question. We're going to have a little discussion here.
Yeah.
Because at the time of this recording, 2 days ago, the new trailer released for...
Batman versus Superman, which I think is trailer number 2 or 3. I don't know.
I believe it's number 2.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah.
So, there was a Comic-Con one, then there was a longer one, and now the longest one.
Yep.
And history lesson. I've been skeptical about this movie from the get-go. Since it was announced, it felt like a cheap gimmick. Man of Steel... didn't perform as well as WB wanted, but they thought, okay, well, instead of greenlighting Man of Steel 2, let's just bring in Batman. Let's do that, because you know what people like? Universes. And we're just going to do a universe real quick. So I think in the next 2 movies, we'll just get the Justice League going. We'll just get this out real quick. So from the get-go, it felt like a marketing ploy instead of a reason to bring Batman and Superman together.
In the sense of a marketing ploy, I do think it worked fucking fantastically.
Oh, yeah, I'm in the minority.
People were talking all over the place once they saw.
I think the first one, the first trailer that came out, would broke records of how many views it got on YouTube. It had 10 million in the span of a few hours or something.
Yeah.
It was incredible. And
it's
people,
full of hype.
People got really excited. People think it's really good. And I, before the trailer 3, I've looked at these trailers and been I don't know. I'm still skeptical. I was very, very unconvinced with the first one that had the clown posse people, the Day of the Dead makeup, and people chanting to Superman. He comes down in front of a statue with a broken head or something, and Batman says, "Can you bleed? I'm gonna make you." And people are like, "Oh my god, boner's hard. Oh man, so many boners." I'm like, that's a stupid line.
No,
Batman wouldn't say that ever. That is not Batman's character.
That
and,
line is bad fucking ass. I will disagree with that.
So you can see our disagreements here. It's the worst cheesecake 90s action movie line.
And I
fucking
love that
line. It should be coming
from
the lips of Arnold Schwarzenegger or Bruce Willis. I hate it.
I love that line. We will disagree. But this is where it's crazy because I was very into this movie.
You bought that line. And
I bought that line.
I think the second trailer, which is better, you loved that second trailer.
Yeah.
Not the one that just came out.
Okay.
The one that featured more and showed glimpses of Wonder Woman and Batman and Superman punching through some kind of ceiling.
Yeah, and they were fighting, and you saw the Batmobile.
That's
what
it was. It was that final shot where Superman rips off the sides of the Batmobile and Batman just slowly stands up.
It's badass.
Ready to fight.
Yeah.
That's when I was like, okay, I kind of have a chubby now. Not full-on boner, but, you worked me a little.
But...
And now...
Well, let's not get... Again, as I've stated before, I'm a giant... I love Superman. I'm a big Superman guy.
Mm-hmm.
I like Superman more than Batman. But I like Batman a whole lot, too. I'm not negating. I don't know why. I love the Superman character. And we'll get into that in Kill Bill.
Sure.
Because there's a great Superman little speech in this movie.
There is.
So... But, yeah, I was very excited. I think you and I are the only two people in the world that enjoyed Superman Returns.
Yeah, Superman Returns was great.
Fucking fantastic Superman. It's my favorite Superman movie.
Absolutely.
It's Brandon
crazy.
Ralph.
That's why we started the podcast. Yeah. We were Superman Returns, and you're like, Superman Returns. It's like, podcast.
Brandon Routh is a great, great Superman.
He's perfect.
I wished he would have come back.
Perfect as Clark Kent and Superman.
He was
really good.
He was better than, who's playing him now?
It's Henry Cavill.
Yeah. Who's not bad. And he's very ripped.
I think he's a great Superman. He's yet to sell me in Clark Kent.
Here's my thing, and it's very petty, but this is my complaint, is the fact that he's a British dude, and I don't care about that, but he also has those British teeth, and when I envision Superman, Superman is going to have fucking perfect veneer teeth. He's going to be like, oh, wow. Those are the teeth of a superhero, and he
does.
Doesn't have them.
All right. So if we're doing, the idealized Superman, he should be, Adonis. Just,
exactly.
An insanely beautiful. But, come on. His teeth aren't the British teeth. That man is a 10 out of 10 by any other.
Exactly. He's a gorgeous man, but I'm saying... And it's not all of his teeth. It's just his bottom teeth. I'm very petty. I have
broken this
down.
That's okay.
But this is just me. When I picture Superman, he's going to be perfect. He is the idealized man. And that is my one complaint. And I said it was petty, and I agree it is petty.
Yeah.
What's crazy is that Batman in Batman versus Superman is, oh my God, that is the perfect human specimen.
Ben Affleck's the perfect specimen?
In this Batman, he is fucking jacked. He's ripped. Uh-huh. He's got that jaw. He's got the teeth.
I mean, it's a Zack Snyder movie. You know they were going to fucking put him muscles. That was a gimme, but I'm one of the not the undersung supporters, but as soon as it was announced Ben Affleck was going to be Batman, I was like, cool. That makes sense.
I was totally into it. A lot of people hated.
Daredevil. He did Daredevil. It's fuck it. He was the best part of Daredevil. Go back and watch it.
And the thing
it's
with,
not his fault.
The thing that people, dude, any actor can be a total shitball if they have a total shitball director. Dude, Brad Pitt can crank out some shit. World War Z.
Was shit.
Yeah, it's shit, and he is shit in it. And Brad Pitt is a great actor, but if you've got a garbage director and a garbage script, it doesn't fucking matter. It's not going to work.
I agree.
So, I thought the Ben Affleck hate was a little garbage. I think the worst
garbage.
Batman to date is George Clooney.
The worst Batman is George Clooney. The worst Bruce Wayne is Val Kilmer.
Yeah, I can see that.
They're both equal parts of bad.
Yeah.
Because I think Clooney's a brilliant Bruce Wayne. I loved Val Kilmer's Batman.
I loved him as Batman.
Yeah.
Batman Forever is my favorite of the original quadrilogy.
Oh, my. So, no.
I know. Again, these are my opinions. Returns is a very close second. But...
controversial statement. I think Batman and Robin is my favorite.
Because
I don't think, like, the first two are great. They're fine. But, like, Batman and Robin is so bad, it's great. Like, Arnold Schwarzenegger giving an ice line, an ice pun
every fucking
line
time?
Of dialogue? Yeah. Give me that movie any day over fucking Michael Keaton being serious.
If you're watching Batman and Robin in the aspect of the 60s camp Adam West Batman, yeah. It fucking works.
It was perfect, yeah. It's that Batman.
But, yeah coming off of, like, and they started that trip when Joel Schumacher took over with Batman Forever.
Yep.
Because it got really, really stylized.
He has a theater background. Like, that's a theater director. Like, and you ask him to make a Batman, like, you should expect, purple neons and shit.
Exactly. Why is the Batmobile this ultimate stealth vehicle running around with giant blue neons? Like, how is that?
It looks really cool.
It looks cool as fuck, but what? How are you hiding from anybody in that?
You're not hiding. You're fucking Batman.
Yeah.
You're terrorizing people.
But you're the terror in the night. Like, not the terror in the giant blue fucking neon.
The terror in the night, not the terror in the light. Come on, there was a clear rhyme there for you. And you dropped it.
I'm drunk.
That's okay.
So, let's bring this back. Let's talk about this final trailer that released.
Yeah, Batman vs. Superman just released
I was on the hype train. You were not on the hype train.
No, not at all.
I have now joined you. I am off this hype train.
Hey, welcome.
I have no reason to see this fucking movie now.
No, no, you know everything that's going to happen.
I know everything that's going to happen.
Except you're not going to see a 30-minute long fight scene that makes you forget why you wanted to see Superman
fight. Dude, I don't care. Why did you put Doomsday in this movie? What the fuck?
Because I'm telling you, you have to crowd in as much as you can because the next movie is going to be Justice League where you have 10 superheroes fighting Doomsday.
But then you get this fucking Batman Robin bloat, which is what I hate about that movie, because dude, Batman and Robin, you got Batman, you got Robin, you got Batgirl, you got Ice or Mr. Freeze, you got Poison Ivy, you got Bane, all these fucking things happening,
and a bat credit card and bat nipples and
dude, and like, it's so overwhelming that nobody gets proper time, and that's
agreed.
What's gonna happen with this. Even if it comes in at 3 hours, which I'm kind of guessing it's going
to
be.
Oh, it has to be at least 240.
It's going to be 2.5, yeah. I'm just with you, and I hate it. DC is fucking up because they're trying to be Marvel where Marvel is right fucking now.
They shouldn't be trying to be Marvel.
Whereas Marvel has put like 7 years into growing what they are.
Yeah, well, between Iron Man 1 and The Avengers, that's 7 movies that are in that timeline that take place.
And that's
place.
Just like, The Avengers.
People say like, oh, well, there's been 7 Batman movies now and 6 Superman, so they should be in a movie. It's like, well, no, because there's only 1 movie before like pretty much the Justice League happens, because in this movie we're supposed to see Aquaman, and we might see The Flash, and we might see Cyborg, and we might see a Green Lantern cameo.
And
I don't care. Oh my god, are they gonna do the Martian? Or
I think he's been rumored to be here too, man. Show up.
Martian Manhunter.
Manhunter. But dude, like, okay, here, when I first heard rumors, I heard rumors of them using General Zod to make a Bizarro Superman, which I thought would work fucking great.
I heard immediately. I never heard the Bizarro. I heard it was Doomsday.
And
I
do that piss-
and this
because
trailer confirms that.
It does confirm it, and that pisses me off for a couple of reasons. Number two, I am also in the very, very small minority in that I like the Doomsday character. Mm. I was around when Death of Superman came out. I bought that comic trade.
Sure.
I remember walking to the comic store and I bought it, and it was a big time in the 90s. Yeah. Like Superman.
It was a big event.
Superman died, and Doomsday is what killed him.
Which is why you don't bring him into the first Batman and Superman.
Exactly,
movie.
And especially
you
in
save
the last
him.
30 minutes. And now, I brought this up with my friend and he kind of laughed at me, and I agree. I guess Darkseid is going to be the Thanos character, but
that's fine. That makes sense.
You could have kept Doomsday.
You keep Doomsday in your pocket until you try to freshen things up and you kill off Superman.
That or
to bring him back 2 or 3 movies later.
Dude, you could have kept Doomsday around as a big bad for a couple of movies because he's so fucking brutally tough. Like,
well, I will. This is where I'm gonna depart with you, because I agree they're not handling Doomsday correctly. I disagree that I don't think he's a strong character sense of like an actual character. Like, he is very brutal and
he's
physically
one-dimensional
strong.
Character, but yes. I like him.
And that's what I don't get, and I don't like characters like that. And I think that's why you like some of the comic characters you like, and I don't go for those. But I don't think he supports more than one movie. I think he is literally like the 30-minute secondary villain that comes in to kill Superman, and that's all.
See, I think...
Which I don't think they're going to kill Superman in this one, so
no,
I think
no.
he's wasted. I think he's
I do, too.
Doomsday.
I think he could have been a whole movie, or he could have been... Again, if they had done it right like Marvel, he could have been the baddie that is setting up, and he's coming in and he's beating the... Sorry about that, folks.
Oh!
He's beating the shit out of your Blue Beetles. He's beating the fuck out of your Green Lantern reboot. He's coming in at the end and...
I love the Blue Beetle. It makes
me
so happy.
Yeah.
And Booster Gold?
Yeah,
I want to see a Blue Beetle and Booster Gold.
Booster
movie.
Gold, who he smashes the fuck out of his head via car door in the comic. Like, that's what... Doomsday could have been this that builds up into what Batman Superman is, and they team up to fight him here and bring in the Justice League and still. But yeah, like, it's wasted, man, and I hate that. You're not doing Doomsday justice. And he's not a great character, but he deserves more than...
Yeah.
And how the fuck are they getting him from Zod? Like, Bizarro from Zod works.
It's a stupid Zack Snyder fucking script, and it starts with, like, in Man of Steel, how they had the genetics background for Krypton. Like, none of that's needed. You don't need, like, Superman to find the genetic code of his people, and his people are extinct because, you know, there's a caste system on Krypton, and General Zod's like this caste and that. It just complicates things. It's no sense. Like, now they have to do the same. It's like, well, we're going to carry that genetic theme over, and there's be magic blood in General Zod that's going to make this Doomsday thing. It's like, okay, that's going to be, I already see it, 25 minutes of plot setup in a movie, when you can easily just be like, holy shit, this thing popped down from sky and is beating up a city, and like, go in. And that's what Doomsday is. It's just a thing that shows up that you deal with. You don't need a background.
And that's what was great in the comic book. Doomsday is shown breaking out of what he, you know, he's created somehow somewhere, and much like the Incredible Hulk, the more damage you do to him, the stronger he becomes, which is great. I don't see that they're going to get that from this either.
Nope.
He's
just going to be another beater. Like how Man of Steel ended, it's just this giant fight scene between two people who don't get hurt. I think it's going to be that in this one.
And working, again, if you're making a clone of General Zod, Bizarro works. Where the fuck is Doomsday coming from?
Yeah, if you are doing like the genetic stuff, a Bizarro, that is a perfect way to explain Bizarro Superman.
Yeah, that's fucking works.
Yep.
What?
I don't know why. So, they're just really disrespectful to the mythology. They were in Man of Steel. It looks like they're going to be disrespectful again. And it's just a shame to see DC failing this hard in movies, because before this they had, what, Green Lantern and the Dark Knight trilogy, which...
Wait, are you for Green Lantern?
No, I'm saying disrespectful.
Oh, okay.
And I would even say, like, the Dark Knight Christopher Nolan trilogy, I like them. I really love Dark Knight. It's a fantastic movie. The one with the Joker.
Yeah, it peaks it, too.
Super disrespectful to the mythology. Don't know what they're doing. And he flounders in the third one when it comes to, like, the action,
again,
the comic book stuff.
Flounders in the fact that it becomes full of bloat, man.
It does. Oh, you do too much.
People need to know when to trim, and that's going to suffer this one too. So.
Yep, I agree. But that said, give me a 5-hour Marvel Civil War movie and I won't complain about bloat at all. I'll eat it up.
So speaking of bloat, let's take this time and transition into a man that knows how to work with so much.
Oh.
Did you see that transition?
I did. I thought you were going to transition into Andre.
You can if you want.
Because bloat, this champagne will make you not bloat when you drink it. It's light and crisp and clear.
It'll air you out. Andre California Champagne, thanks for sponsoring us again. You guys are fantastic. Best sponsors we've ever had.
That's right.
Please keep doing what you're doing. We'll keep doing what we're doing. Andre California Champagne.
Ba-da-ba-da.
So, let's move into this. We're going to get into...
Kill Bill.
1 and 2, directed by the fantastic Quentin Tarantino. And...
Amazing. Amazing.
I will say... It was a very, very, very hard battle for me to not have a Tarantino in my top 5.
I know.
Because this guy is one of, if not my favorite directors. I fucking love... I have never not enjoyed every second of a Tarantino movie.
Yeah, there's not a movie that I don't think is less... That is such a convoluted sentence. I think all of his movies are great, and there is not a movie that I think is less than great.
Here's my one that I... and. Death Proof,
I think, is fantastic and one of his best.
It's, to me, it's my least favorite, but here's my reasoning why. I've only seen it the one time. I saw it in theaters
with Planet Terror,
as the giant grindhouse big 4-hour feature. I went in and they showed Planet Terror first, and I took whiskey in, and we were really stoned before we went in. So the plan was to go out after Planet Terror and smoke more weed and be ready for Death Proof. I did not know Because I knew that they were doing two, I thought there would be an intermission. Instead of an intermission, they showed all those cool fake trailers. Yeah. And I didn't want to miss those.
Werewolf Nazi SS or something.
I was a big fan of Thanksgiving.
Thanksgiving's great. Don't, which was directed by Edgar Wright. The ones like, you want to go in the basement, don't! You want to go upstairs, don't! That's Edgar Wright. I think Simon Pegg's in it real quickly, too.
They also made an actual movie of that one.
Did they really? I want to see it.
It's fun.
Yeah?
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
We're going to hunt this down.
It does not have near... It was on Netflix for a while. That's where I saw it. It does not have near the budget of The Machete that got made eventually.
Oh, I forgot that was one, wasn't it? That did spawn off.
The Machete was one of the most popular ones, actually. And I think it was shown maybe before Planet Terror.
Well,
because they had the fake trailers then, and then... But then that was the thing. And so I think I was maybe... I was coming down off the weed, and then we got right into that, and I just... I would like to watch it again. I have not. That's the only one I haven't seen more than once.
I think you should. And maybe don't drink whiskey while watching it.
Yeah, I'll see it standalone.
Or I think you'll like it.
I don't think it'll matter if I'm drinking the whiskey at the beginning of watching it. Yeah. Not a full 2 hours beforehand.
If you've been doing it and
beforehand.
Going in. And, I can see that movie being kind of a drag. Because it's slow. It's Tarantino, a much slower. Slow. It's a very slow Tarantino film. My least favorite is Reservoir Dogs.
Really?
That's controversial.
That is controversial.
I prefer Jackie Brown and Glorious Bastards. I prefer all of them over at Reservoir.
If we're rating them all, I think Jackie Brown's probably my favorite.
Jackie Brown's up there.
It's good. I like I love Pulp Fiction too.
Pulp Fiction's like my number two after The Kill Bills. I think Inglourious Basterds and Django are above Jackie Brown for me. And then Jackie Brown.
For me, I like Inglourious Basterds, but I'm going to be honest, 80% of my love for that movie is Hans goddamn Landa.
Hans Landa's the best.
Dude, he takes that entire movie. Every time he's on screen, it is a fucking gem. And I like him in Django, but it's not nearly the same.
No, I think Django is the better movie. I think
really?
Inglourious has the better performances, but like Django, I don't think there's fat to be trimmed.
I love Leo in Django.
Oh, he's great. He's phenomenal.
He's the best part of Django, yes.
Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely.
But there's nothing I would get rid of. Like Inglourious Basterds, you may or may not remember, has so many fucking scenes of like the German guy and the Jewish girl, Shoshana.
Mm-hmm.
Shoshana and I can't think of his name. Daniel Brühl's character.
Yeah.
The war soldier who shot all the people. Talking about 30s expressionist films.
Well,
for 20 minutes, we're going to talk about the films of old. It's like, have you seen this? This is a great film. Have you seen this? It's like, we get it, Tarantino. You like films. Like, fucking stop it.
Inglourious Basterds was his love letter to 30s style film, though.
It was. And I get that, but I don't need a scene like pretty much being like, these are the ones I like, get it?
So that would be your bloat in that?
Yeah, I think you can cut a lot of his stuff off. I think he's needed specifically for the final act where they're playing his video of shooting all the soldiers while all the other people are dying and the audience becomes the audience in the theater. Like, we're all like, yeah, kill Hitler and kill all these people. And that's literally what the Germans were doing to the screen in the theater. It's like, that's brilliant. Like, that's great double play. You need him for that, but I think a lot of his earlier stuff, get rid of it.
So, let's just get Kill Bill. So,
Volume 1. We'll start with Volume 1.
Yeah, we will start with 1.
Let's start with Volume 2 and just say, fuck the order. No.
Okay, so just real quick, since you brought it up.
That's crazy. We can't
Of the two, which is your favorite? Which do you like better?
This is what, well, I had this in case you did. You were like, Ryan, that's two movies, pick one. Volume 2.
Me too. Awesome.
Yeah, hooray. Usually people fall for the flash of the end of Volume 1, but...
Volume 1 is very fun, it's very good, but I like 2 better.
Oh, absolutely.
2 is the better movie, but we'll get into 1.
Yeah.
Which is not negate... 1 is also really fucking good.
Oh, I think they're both perfect movies.
Compared in the mainstream, number 1 is easily the more iconic. This is the one people... When you say Kill Bill, this is what they think of. They think of her in the
yellow and black suit,
which is... What I love about Kill Bill is that is a bastardization.
So many references.
Well, it's a mishmash of two of my favorite genres of film, which is martial arts and westerns.
Yeah.
And
kind of, because they're very split. Like, Volume 2 is very western.
Yeah, but it still has a lot of the martial arts. Volume 2 has a lot of martial arts in it, too, but...
There's a little bit.
Yeah.
I don't think... There's
Volume 2 is when she...
We can talk about that.
Yeah, we'll get to it, and I'll bring it back, but... So, Volume 1... Volume 1
is... Oh, that's right, Jaime. I'm fucking stupid. I'm a stupid person.
Yeah, that's what... I'm saying. It has pineapple. So, but Volume 1, yeah, it is very much more of the focus on the kung fu than the western, whereas 2 is much more focused on the western than the kung fu, but there are elements of both in both of them. Now, originally, I do know that he had wanted to release both these movies at once.
Yes.
In a very grindhouse style where you would have just the intermission in between them.
But they were going to make him cut a lot of it out.
So yeah.
Instead, he went with the 2.
Yeah.
And he shot a bunch of footage new since he was splitting it up, which we can talk about later if you want. But I'm on you. I know all this. Well, I'll help you out, too.
I'm glad that it didn't work out that way, but I also kind of wish that it would have been just one big movie.
I mean, I get extra stuff, but like we're now missing the Michael J. White fight scene from Volume 2 that's on the DVD and Blu-ray. That was originally part, but they cut it because they needed like the 5-minute recap of her driving in the car in Volume 2, like saying like who has she killed and who does she have left to kill. You wouldn't need that, and then we can get that like cool little Bill fight scene, like where you see Bill's a badass before like. We know at the very end, like, oh, Bill's a badass. Yeah. Okay.
Well, see, I think it's very, and that's the good thing that Tarantino does in this, is that even without Bill doing, you don't even see Bill at all outside of his hand.
In the first one, yeah.
And you know that Bill is a badass. And that's just great camera work and storytelling to, like, you know.
And character work, because the characters, like, are legitimately afraid of Bill.
Yeah.
Like, angered by him. Like.
And they do what he says. Like, when Elle Driver is introduced, like, she stops what she's right there ready to kill the bride, and she fucking stops because Bill tells her to. You do not go against what Bill says.
We owe her more than that. You don't owe her shit.
Shit.
Quiet. You don't owe her shit.
Yeah. So that's another great aspect that I believe that Uma Thurman as the bride character brings in, because she is the only one that does resist Bill, and she resists him fucking hard.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna just start going through my notes here. Kill Bill number 1 has a great opening, and that's where it's in black and white, and she's shown on the ground.
Wow. Bow, 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 bow,
she's bow, already shown bow, bow, beating the fuck up, and Bill's telling her, "You'll find that this is not me at my most evil. This is me at my most masochistic." And she says, "Bill, it's your baby." And as she says, "Baby," he shoots her in the head.
Yep.
That's the opening scene.
Yeah. Cut to credits, and then Nancy Sinatra's "Bang Bang, You Shot Me Down,"
which
plays.
Is great.
Perfect.
Yeah. Great use of music.
The Klingon proverb, which is revenge is a dish best served cold, which is from anything, but like I love that Tarantino is like, we're going to do from Star Trek, Klingon proverb.
Well, and it brings a little humor
not?
In right off the bat, and then it shows us.
That really, like, you want to talk about that opening, it explains the entire movie. It is black and white, so it's going to be stylistic. It is brutal. Because you see, like, a pregnant woman get shot in the head. And then it is also funny because of the Klingon proverb. Like, that tells you everything you need to know in the span of 3 minutes, and that's more than can be said about a lot of movies.
And so then the opening thing we get is her pulling up to a suburban house.
Yes. In the pussy wagon,
which is one of the best vehicles ever.
It's a great sight gag, and it's even better once you figure out how she got it. And
So
we should say this movie is very
Tarantino-esque in the fact that it's disjointed storytelling.
It's not in chronological order.
Not
it's
at
very
all.
Asynchronous. You'll see like parts of the end very early on, and you'll see like characters die at the very beginning who pop up like throughout. You see them in the path.
Yeah. Much like, you know, Vincent Vega does throughout Pulp Fiction. Mm-hmm. So it's again, that's a Tarantino staple in that he's going to tell you the story in non-linear fashion. So at the beginning, we see the bride getting shot in the head. And the next thing we see is her not with any ill repercussions. She's driving this truck into a suburban neighborhood. And she walks up and she knocks on the door. And as soon as the door opens, we get this iconic music, which repeats throughout whenever there's...
I can't even do it, I don't think.
But. Yeah. Whenever there's conflict.
No, that's a dramatic squirrel. I can't do it. Oh, that's it. Yeah.
So, yeah. And it's one of the, we later find out, one of the first assassins that was part of her crew that Bill brought.
Vernita Green, played by Vivica A. Fox.
Who comes in, and as soon as the door opens, a fight fucking starts.
Yes.
Because she knows why she's there.
A really good fight.
Yeah.
Like, even, what, 10 years later, 11 years later, it's still, like, pretty visceral.
Oh, it's a great fight.
It doesn't feel staged
or... This was, again, I believe, was this not also the work of the guy from The Matrix, right?
King.
Yeah. Dude, the guy's the best fight choreographer ever.
Yeah, which we'll talk about more in The House of Blue Leaves, which is amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's... This fight takes as it's exactly how I would imagine a fight taking place in a suburban household would play out. There's all this crap that gets in the way, that gets busted, that gets used.
Yeah.
It's just, it's a brutal, brutal fight in very Tarantino-esque methods.
Like Tarantino, like in the middle of the fight, they're squaring off, getting ready to give another blows, and the way the shot is set up, there's a window that you can see the front lawn, and
a
then
giant
a school
bay window.
Bus
yep.
just comes, stops, you hear the
and you see them both kind of look out the window.
They're waiting, and then a kid comes, and at the last second, they decide to put it away and have this nice, civil, friendly, not friendly talk.
Yeah.
And it's so good. It's the tension. Like, Tarantino is like, good action, but just wait till you have these two people talk. And then, like, that's as compelling as the action, is hearing the people talk and trying to...
He's the best at setting up awkward tensions.
Yes.
And again, I will read the opening scene of Inglourious Bastards.
Which is like a 20-minute scene
of two
people
talking.
Dude, it
is one of the
talking.
Most tense fucking things I've ever sat through in my entire life. I remember gripping the arm of the fucking theater chair I was in. It was...
Very, very simple, understated scene that is one of the best.
Yeah, it's my favorite scene and opening scene in any movie ever.
Agreed. But...
Mm-hmm. So yeah, so they put the knives away, they play nice with Vernita Green's daughter, who's home from school, they act like they're friends, and there's just been an accident in the house, honey. Now don't come in here, because there's glass on the floor, and you'll cut yourself.
What happened, Mommy?
So she sends her up to her room. Yeah, she sends her up to her room, and then, in another just weird motion, because the bride now knows that her daughter is home, they're not going to continue this fight.
Mm-hmm.
So Vernita Green says, so you want some coffee? And the bride says, yeah, sure. And so they go into the kitchen, and she starts making coffee. And they're still talking about what they're going to do, and the bride is still very pissed, but she's being respectful of the fact that she has a daughter, and she's not going to kill her around
her
daughter.
Tarantino is like, that's his thing, is he humanizes these assassins, these bad, villainized people. He has a way of humanizing them, making them seem very relatable.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. In the midst of this, they're still talking shit to each other, but still keeping their distance. They're very guarded. And then... Vernita Green starts to make her daughter cereal.
Mm-hmm.
And
with a kaboom box.
Which, coincidentally, has a gun inside of it that she takes a shot at the bride with, and it goes kaboom, and she misses. And in that
visual
instant,
foreshadowing.
The bride, I love that. She drops her coffee cup, kicks it at her, throws a knife, kills her.
Mm-hmm.
And then she takes out her list, and she marks off...
The death list 5, and she crosses off...
Number 2. And we see that number 1 is already crossed off.
Oren Ishii.
So we know that Oren Ishii has already been taken care of. Mm-hmm. We have not seen that.
But we know she's gone.
Which is not a surprise, but it's just, again, it's cool storytelling.
This is the type of movie you know...
That Tarantino's
going to
bring.
Going to make it.
Yeah.
Like, you're like, yeah, I think the bride's going to win.
And I will say, man, Uma is fucking great in this movie. Like,
she's great and she's hot. And
yeah.
I get so much flack for Uma. Yeah, nobody is. But, like, man, she does it for me in Kill Bill.
She's great in Kill Bill.
And, like, because I saw these right at the end of high school going into college. It's actually my first rated R movie in a theater. It came out the day I turned 18 or 17.
This was?
Yeah, at 17, the day I turned 17.
I guess not. You know, I worked in a theater, so I saw a shit ton of rated R's in theater.
But this is my first one in a theater. Saw the second one right before college. So when I was doing all these college art classes, it was, you want a portrait, figure out somebody to paint, do that as like Uma Thurman. Like, you're going to do this kind of collage, Uma Thurman collage. Like, that was it. Like, my first 2 years of college, bunch of Uma Thurman shit from Kill Bill. And
so, you know, she absolutely carries this movie, both of these.
Yes.
And she does it very easily. Like...
Yeah.
She has great range.
She's very effortless in her delivery, and she does, like you said, the range is, she gives so many different types of emotions.
And I can see, you know, a lot of people, especially during this time, are calling her Tarantino's muse, and I can absolutely see that, man. Mm-hmm. They worked really well together during this
time.
Which
is really surprising. They've not worked together since.
I anticipate that they maybe will again, maybe for when he claims he's going to quit making movies.
Last movie has to have Uma Thurman.
Yeah.
It just has to.
I would hate to see him do that because I love Tarantino. Mm-hmm. I think you're not going to not make good movies. So.
Yeah, well, he said some bullshit about, like, you just get to a point and then you don't have anything left in you. It's like, maybe, but, like, look at fucking Martin Scorsese. Not like every single one of his movies is a masterpiece,
but
he's really
still does,
good.
Dude, like The Departed is one of my favorite Scorsese.
The Departed was good.
And
Hugo was
out,
good. Wolf of Wall Street was really good.
And those came out towards the end of his career.
Yeah. And Spielberg also hit and miss, but like...
Exactly. That's what's going to happen.
Good,
you're not going to knock it out of the park every time.
Agreed. Unless you're M. Night Shyamalan, in which case you had one kind of take and you did it, and then you have nothing else. Then you can quit.
He had like three good movies.
He did, but it's the same thing. It's like the twist. It's like, it's a superhero movie with a twist. It's a horror movie with a twist.
What a twist.
So it's an alien movie with a twist.
After we see...
Signs are about signs from God.
The Vernita Green fight. Then we are treated to... Is that when we see her wake up in the hospital?
The church.
We get the church, and we get the sheriff aftermath. Pulling into the church.
Michael Parks, who is also one of another role in the second movie.
Yeah, he plays the Esteban. Mexican pimp, who I fucking love.
Oh my... All right, so you're talking about good actors. This guy, like, I don't think unless you are a Michael Parks fan or you really pay attention to those credits, do you know those
that
are...
That is two of the same... Yeah. It's the same guy.
It's the same person.
Because he's playing a Texas sheriff and then a Mexican pimp. Mm-hmm. And you really would have no idea unless somebody points it out to you.
Agreed.
Like, it's so good. I like him better as the pimp, but he does one of my favorite lines as the sheriff where when he's leaning over the bride and she spits in his face and he just leans back and he says... this
son
tall drink cocksucker isn't dead.
Before that, he says son number one. He addresses his son as son number one. Like, I love that, too.
And what's crazy, too, that's his real son.
Yeah.
That's also awesome.
Another fact, that same sheriff is in Planet Terror.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, my God. It just keeps going. Yeah, oh, what are we going to do?
It's meta, bro.
I know. I love it. I love it.
So, I like how... So then we're shown...
Then it goes to the hospital.
Yeah, then it shows to the hospital, and it says 4 years later. Mm-hmm. So we know, and what happens is that a mosquito bites her on the arm, and that's what awakens the bride from this coma. She's been in a coma for 4 years, mm-hmm. and she wakes up, and another little scene that I never picked up on until this time is that she immediately looks at her hands, and just from the lines in her hands, realizes she's been in a coma for 4 years.
It's been a while. The hands look older. They're more.
She says 4 years, and so she knows exactly how long she's been out. And then she has that wrenching scene where she touches her belly. She knows she's not pregnant. All that. It's great Uma Thurman acting. Yeah, she knocks on her head.
The metal plate where she was shot.
You hear the dong.
It's amazing.
You're introduced to Buck
from Huntsville, Texas.
Yeah,
his name is Buck, and he's here to fuck.
And the trucker guy. So it's great stuff. And she's what's crazy.
Horrifying.
It's very horrifying.
Horrifying
again.
Thought.
And it's showing so much about the bride and who she is and how much of a badass she is by showing you and not telling you. Because also, when she wakes up, you hear the heart monitor beating very, very, very fastly. She's very stressed out because she's just woken up from a coma. And then she hears the noises outside, and her heartbeat's still going really fast, and she's making this decision, and she pretends to be asleep in the coma again.
And she stops her heartbeat.
Yeah, she regulates her heartbeat down back.
Yeah.
That's just such a nice fucking awesome touch that can be missed.
Well, Buck is using her comatose body to rent out for sex to horrible, heinous people, right?
Usually truckers. I believe he's supposed to be a trucker.
So this trucker, in the middle of it, finds out she's not comatose.
He gets his lip bitten off.
Yes.
And she does some other things to him.
And then Buck comes in because every once in a while...
Well, it's 20 minutes.
It can get drier than a...
Yeah, well, he throws this gross, gross thing of Vaseline that's just...
It's
all dirty.
I think it's like it has pubic hairs, like prosthetic pubic hairs on there, like some makeup effects artists use. It's, like it's the grossest.
It's
looking
really gross fucking thing
in cinema.
Yeah, it's really well done.
Yeah,
and so Buck comes back 20 minutes later, and he opens the door, and he sees the guy on the floor dead,
bloodied.
The bride is at this point taking the trucker's knife, and we get. It's very, very horror movie-esque where it pans down to her.
The music's like almost, it's very similar to like The Exorcist or something, like the tubular bells. It's very, like you said, it's a horror movie.
Yeah, it's very horror movie vibe. And she, at this point, because she's been in a coma for 4 years, her legs do not work. So when she tries to get out of the bed, she immediately collapses onto the floor.
Yeah.
And so she's on the floor when Buck comes in, and she has the trucker's knife, and she cuts Buck's Achilles tendon, which is another brutal scene, which makes people just uncomfortable.
Yeah, just saying that and thinking about that tendon getting cut. Oh. Yeah.
And so he crawls on the ground, and then she brings him over to the door and is slamming his head into the door and asking him where Bill is, and he doesn't know. He's like, I don't know what you're talking about. And so she eventually kills Buck and takes his car keys.
It's another attention to detail visual gag that I love is the last time she slams, the camera goes down to his feet, and his
you see
foot
it twitch.
Does like a little spasm.
Yeah, you see his foot twitching.
Yeah.
It's a great touch.
So good.
And so she takes his keys from his gowns. He's wearing nurse
from
scrubs.
His scrubs.
Yeah. And she looks at him and she sees the keychain says Pussy Wagon.
Fucker.
She
and then she
fucker,
slams the door
one more time.
Because what a chauvinist, right?
Yeah. And so she takes these keys and she starts to remove his scrubs so she can get out. And so she's in the scrubs in a wheelchair and we cut to her rolling through the parking garage. And
Isaac Hayes' Truck Turner theme, the guy who did Shaft's theme. So very similar.
So she's looking she's like, I got to find this car.
Yeah.
And what does she roll up to? But a big yellow truck with the words Pussy Wagon on the back.
Bright pink.
And the exact same style as the keychain she has. And she gives a little sly smile like, well, of course, that's the truck. So we get the scene of her inside, and she's trying to will her legs into moving again.
You're describing these scenes, and as soon as you are like, I know the exact music that's playing, I'm like, God, this movie is so ingrained in my head.
What's really cool about this part, next part, is, you know, while she's trying to get her legs to work again, she's telling us the story of Oren Ishii. And what's cool is that this whole, it's a total disembark from the rest of the movie in that it's done in the anime style. And I believe, I wrote this note down, I believe this is the same guy that animated Kid's Story.
I think it
from
is.
From the Animatrix.
Yeah,
because
it's
the similar style. I believe that's the same guy. Mm-hmm. And it's a really cool little vignette, all done in anime.
Music by Ennio Morricone, who did the Once Upon a West, the Clint Eastwood Spaghetti Western trilogies. So, very Western theme, even though it's the anime
Japan influence, style. So.
Which is super violent. Some of the most violent parts of the movie up to that point.
Yeah.
That's not true. It's the most violent part in Kill Bill, like it could be any of them.
So, it's a really cool little break from the regular pacing of the story. It's like, I think, a 15, 20-minute scene. And then it tells all about Oren Ishii, and then it finally cuts back to the bride in the backseat of the truck.
Well, we're introduced to Oren Ishii's whole party. Like, you get Gogo Yubari in this. You learn about Sophie Marceau, the French translator. Mm-hmm. So you're introduced to these people who are also going to be, like, foils for Beatrix to take on later. Oh, we don't know it's Beatrix yet, by the way.
Beep. So, yeah,
which is another weird thing we could talk about, too, that they beep out her name the entire movie.
I like that. But then we cut back, and she's telling this whole story, but she says, but before we do all that, you have to wiggle your big toe. And then you see it wiggle. And I love this next scene because she's like, there we go. Hard part's over. Now let's see if we can get the rest of these little piggies wiggling. And then it cuts to, I think it's like 12 hours later, and you see the door. It doesn't show her. It just,
ever.
It's from the bottom.
You just see her feet.
Come out,
walking,
and you see walk up to
the front.
And so you know that, okay, we got legs back.
And you know she's off to Vernita Green's now. She has a pussy wagon. She's back.
So it's not, she doesn't go immediately to Vernita Green because Vernita is number 2 on the list.
Oh, that's right. I'm
fucking
wrong.
She goes from here.
Okay.
Yeah, she goes from here and immediately goes to the airport and takes a one-way ticket to
Okinawa,
Japan, where we meet the great, great Hattori Hanzo. And this whole scene, I think, is my favorite scene
played
in the first movie.
Played by Sonny Chiba, who played Hattori Hanzo in a Japanese TV serial in like the 70s that Tarantino watched. And he's like, I'm just going to bring back that one character for this movie.
But
and
I love this entire scene in the sushi bar.
Yeah.
Where at first, the bride is playing very coy. And she's very flirty, very American with this guy. Mm-hmm. And she's playing him up.
Very touristy.
Yeah, it's great. And, you know, the guy asks what she's doing in Japan. She's like, well, I'm here to find a man. And so they go on. They're talking about other things. And then it comes back. His assistant is, they have this big argument about making the tea. And he says, I would be a general if I'd stayed in the army. And Hattori Hanzo, who we don't know who it is at that point, says, well, if you were a general, I'd be the emperor. And you'd still get the tea.
Know what I'm saying?
Do you understand?
Do you understand? Oh, my God. How did I not get that?
And then the bald guy, as he's going in the back room, turns and says to the bride, I'm not bald. I just shaved my head. Do you understand?
In Japanese, which we're assuming at this point she doesn't know. So it's just a really funny throw off.
And then, you know, so he's back in the back making the tea. At this time, the sushi chef is asking her, so what is this man that you have come to see? Who are you looking for? And she says, well, I've come to search for a man named Hattori Hanzo. He immediately stops and he's just looking down and you hear a plate shatter from the back. And so you know and we know now that this is Hattori Hanzo.
Mm-hmm.
And so he goes up and she shows him all the swords that he has made, that he has kept. But he tells her that he doesn't make instruments of death anymore. He doesn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, well, I need one, and I think when I tell you why, you will make one, because it's because of one of your former proteges that I need it. And he doesn't even say anything. He just walks to this foggy window and writes the name Bill.
Yep.
He says, you can sleep here. It will take me a month to make the sword. And she's just like, great. And then I love this little scene. She walks over the window, and she just erases Bill's name.
Yeah.
Except for the part, she like does with the palm of her hand, and then there's just a little part of the B left. She just coyly takes that away. I love that because it's saying that she wants to erase every aspect of Bill from existence. She doesn't just want to do it. She wants to make him gone.
Every piece.
And it's again, it's just these little storytelling things that Tarantino does that, God, they bring it home so well. And he's doing so much at telling you things by showing you, not telling you, which...
I mean, he's a good filmmaker, and that's what good filmmakers do, is they show, don't
tell.
And
just, it's that little, those little touches, so... Yeah.
I really love, right before that, and I think I've already said it, but as he's leaving, he just whips out a baseball from nowhere, and he's like, oh, so you like samurai swords?
I like baseball.
And he throws it to, like, kind of test her, and she cuts it down real quick, and that's
knows.
Like...
That's when he's like, with the sword.
Okay, I know it's
and then... We have the ceremony of the scene where he gives it the sword, and it says maybe my favorite line in definitely these movies, but...
I know what you're going
to
say.
Yeah, and I wrote it down just to make sure I didn't get it, but it says, if on your journey you should encounter God, God will be cut.
Mm.
Which is just, that's just giving this mythical air of badassness to this sword that he's made.
And to this character, Hattori Hanzo. Mm-hmm.
So she goes from Okinawa to Tokyo.
Mm-hmm.
Where the final showdown with Oren Ishii will take place. Oren Ishii, after leaving the assassin squad, has taken over as the head of all of Yakuza in Japan. So she's like basically the mob boss of Japan.
Except Boss Takanawa disagrees, and he loses his head.
He doesn't disagree long. It's a really cool scene.
Comical decapitation that has you like, okay, so it's not going to be like... horrifically real and horrifying. Like it's a nice little preamble for what's going to happen later. It's like, oh, his head gets cut off and then kind of like spins a little bit in the air, just a little bit unreal enough where you can dissociate and be like, this is fun violence, not like I feel bad violence.
Well, and I remember like, I was like, wow, there's really not a lot of blood for his head getting cut off. And then
it takes a few seconds.
And then there's a fountain of blood that sprays out, and it's
comically bright red.
Yeah, like, it's good.
Yeah. It's so, like, it's like, that's clearly water. Like he's just a fire hose is up that mannequin.
So we're introduced to Oren Ishii. We're introduced to, I think, my favorite character of her squad,
Gogo Yubari.
God, Gogo's awesome.
So many pieces of art done about Gogo Yubari.
Really?
Too.
I would like to see those at some point.
I'll have to
find
them.
Gogo's great. She's kind of sexy. She's incredibly badass. Even the bride says that she doesn't say it, but you get it from the way she's describing her that Gogo is insane.
Yeah.
And that intimidates her even a little bit. Mm-hmm. She knows that she's fucking crazy and she doesn't care about anything.
Fun fact about Gogo Yubari. That is, the outfit she's wearing is her outfit, the school outfit from Battle Royale that she was in.
Really?
Tarantino was a big fan of Battle Royale.
Yeah.
She was in it very prominently as like a really sad character death. Spoiler.
Yeah.
But
Battle
that
Royale's
outfit
crazy.
Is the Battle Royale outfit.
I guess I've not seen Battle Royale enough to put that together. But,
I have. That one could easily make my top 10. I love Battle Royale.
It's like a 6-hour movie, right?
Oh, no. No. It's only 2 hours. It's like an hour and
I'm thinking of another Battle Royale that is also they did later that was like 4 or 6
it
hours.
It must be because this one's only 2 hours.
So, so we get this... We're at the conclusion of the movie of
the
number
House
one.
Of Blue Leaves scene, which is, I think, a 40-45 minute sequence.
Yeah, it's
really,
really
long.
And it's these, again, this is what I was talking about when you talk to somebody about Kill Bill. Mm-hmm. This is what they're going to picture, is this giant fight.
Yeah.
Where she
her
takes
outfit,
on.
Her outfit, too. Like that's the Bruce Lee outfit.
It's
as you
very
said.
Obviously a nod to Bruce
and
Lee.
Another fun fact, on the bottom of her feet.
It says, fuck you.
Right, which you see. Like, Tarantino figures a way to get, like, an angle underneath glass as she's walking so you can see it say, fuck you on
There's
it.
Actually a lot of those scenes in both these movies where she is on a glass and the camera is underneath it and it's shot up that way. I saw that a lot, and I noticed that. Yeah,
he loves them feet.
It's a very obvious nod to Bruce Lee and the iconic black and yellow.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, she confronts...
What's it from? Games of Death or...
Yeah, Game of Death.
Game of Death, yeah.
I love when she calls out Oren Ishii, because she just...
Shabua no ekusyo!
Oren Ishii, you and I have unfinished business. Which is a thing, that's the bride's, like, she says that to everybody. We have unfinished business, because...
You have unfinished business, you and I.
You didn't kill me, and I'm now here to kill you. Mm-hmm. So... It starts off...
Well, one person will die.
Yeah.
It's, you didn't finish me, you have to, or I'm going to finish you. Yeah.
Oren Ishii, as the leader of the Japanese Yakuza, owns her own small army called the Crazy 88s, which they all have swords, and they all wear black Kato masks.
Yep.
And
black and white because 88 keys on the piano.
Oh, I didn't know that.
That's why 88, because piano.
Oh, I didn't know that.
There's another line that references it in Volume 2 that he's like, well, maybe they just thought the number sounded cool.
Yeah.
But it's because there are 88 keys on a piano.
Okay. Because I do remember that line, too. But So we get into one of the longest fight scenes I've ever sat through. And at no point does it get boring.
No.
It is so well choreographed. And I you know, I can't do it justice. There's so many just crazy cool things that happen.
I can name all of them right now and go.
So. I know. But one of the things that I do like... that happens quite frequently is that she uses her very superior Hattori Hanzo sword to just cut through other people's swords. Your sword is a piece of shit compared to mine.
Cut through swords and bodies.
Oh,
like,
yeah,
not
many
only
bodies.
Do you see limbs lost, but like you see one guy sliced in half.
I love it. And it's, I love at the end after she, I mean, very obviously, she does take out all of the crazy 88s. And as she's going to confront Oren Ishii, you hear all this moaning of people that have lost limbs, but they're not dead. Mm. And she makes this statement to all of them, all of you that have lived, I will let you keep your lives, but you will leave your limbs. If you lost one, they belong to me now. And that's just such a badass line. Like, yeah, you're gonna remember this because you're not going to have that arm back. I don't care.
Agreed.
And so she follows Oren Ishii outside. And I love this too. It's never explained, but for some reason it's suddenly snowing. Other than the fact that I think Tarantino again wanted it to look really cool.
Reference like Lady Snowblood.
Yeah, exactly. They walk out and they have this sword fight, her and Oren Ishii, who I should mention now is played by Lucy Liu.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, this is her best acting.
It's one of her best.
Yeah.
I'm sure if I think... harder on it, I can come up with one, but it's definitely one of her best.
And this was at the peak of Lucy Liu love and fandom, so
I think she's adorable.
Yeah, and, yeah, and she's great in this.
Kind of crazy about her,
and she works really well as Oren Ishii. She's she doesn't very rarely play a bad person, and she's really bad in this, and it's great. So they have this big fight, and again, bride comes out victorious. But man, what I love is that the bride has been beat to shit.
Yeah,
and she still doesn't stay down. She's cut the fuck up.
Well, she's gone at this point through who we think are 88 people.
It's not fully
it's not 88,
but it's a shitload.
Yeah.
And they're all members of Wu Ping's fight choreography team, so they got to be all in this.
And one of the bodies on the floor is Tarantino.
Really?
Like,
I didn't know
that.
That's
his cameo. He's one of the dead bodies, or one of the like injured bodies, like when she's talking to him about the limbs.
I didn't know that
He's
either.
On the floor somewhere.
No. Oh.
There's a video that pinpoints it exactly.
Okay.
I know about, but I didn't know it either until I read about it.
So she kills Oren Ishii by very coolly cutting off the top of her head, and you see the brain.
Helps her.
It's a really cool scene.
Yeah.
The final scene in the movie is her dumping Sophie, who was Oren's right-hand woman.
Fucking cold-blooded.
Right. She dumps her in the hospital at Japan.
Her legless, armless body down a bank, and she's just like rolling without limbs.
Yeah, so she has nothing left because the bride has cut these body parts off of her.
Cut her face.
Trying to get information from her.
Almost in a way that is similar to the hooker in Mexico. So you could say maybe she learned it. Well, no, she would have known Esteban by that point. She just goes back, right?
She knows of him.
Surely.
Yeah.
Oh, well, maybe not. That's true. Okay.
But, so the final shot. And again, we have not seen Bill's face. We've only seen Bill's hands. And he comes up and he's comforting Sophie. And he asks her, so... do you know why she left you alive? And she's like, oh, I know exactly why. It's so I could tell you this message that she's coming for you.
Tell Bill I know.
Yeah.
Tell Bill I want him to know.
Yeah.
Tell Bill I want him to know that I want him to know.
It's just great stuff. And so we end there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the end of Kill Bill 1.
Before we move on, I'd like to real quick point out, and this is what I'm going to do every single time it's in a movie because I love it. There's a really long one take at the House of Blue Leaves as the bride is entering. And she's walking up the stairs and going into the dressing room where she finally meets Sophie. It's like 7-minute long camera take where they follow her. They use like a crane over like rooms.
Yeah, that's a really
super impressive.
Cool shot.
All while like a live band is playing. So it's like there's so many things that could go wrong in this one shot. And it goes on so long. Master shot. It's Wonderful. Now we may go on
I'm a big fan of the one long take. And it was another reason that my favorite movie with long takes is Children of Men.
Yeah.
Which also was very
Alfonso
close
Cuarón.
On the list. Yeah.
He's the king of them.
So that's the conclusion of Volume 1, Kill Bill.
Mm-hmm.
Very good movie.
5 out of 5.
I like 2 better.
Agreed.
Not to say that 1 is bad.
No, yeah.
So let's just go ahead and barrel on through, and we'll knock out number 2 here. So Kill Bill 2 opens with, because I believe this came out 6 months after Kill Bill 1.
Yep, Kill Bill 1 came out on October 14th, 2013,
okay.
And Kill Bill Volume 2 came out on April, I don't know the exact date, but 2014. So 6 months,
yeah,
exactly.
6 months. And so we open with the bride and black and white giving us a recap of what happened in one. And I love it because it has that fourth wall breaking where she says, I went on what the critics would call a rip-roaring tale of revenge.
And well, I roared and I rampaged.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I got bloody satisfaction.
It's so good, man. And
it's just pulpy, cheesy dialogue that would sound so bad from any other filmmaker, but when Tarantino does it, you're like, that's fucking real cool.
And so 2 gets really into the more Western aspect.
Mm-hmm.
We are introduced fully to all of the assassins and what happened at the church.
We've not really focused on is Bud, who we had like a very tease at the end of the last one. Like they do, like the end of Volume 1 gives you like to come in Volume 2, and they give you like a preview. But Bud, we see none of in Volume 1, and then we get a lot of Ellie Driver in this one.
And I love Bud. Bud, I think, is my favorite character, and it's played by the great Michael Madsen. He's Bill's brother, and they all seem to have disbanded after the massacre at the church, I feel.
Mm-hmm.
Bud is now living in a shitty trailer in the deserts of New Mexico or California somewhere, and he works as a bouncer at a shitty strip club.
Yeah.
And he hates that job. And
it's really cool because we see Vernita Green is like a housemaker, wife at home. So that's like one thing. Then like this other assassin went on to become the head of Yakuza, doing super, super well. And then we get Bud, who is like fucking barely hanging on at life, it seems like. He's in a shit position. Like he might welcome death.
And the only one still working for Bud is L Driver.
Yeah. Well, for Bill.
For Bill. She's still working for Bill.
I was like, she doesn't like Bud. She's not working for Bud.
No. And I love L Driver's character, too. Bud and L are the two best parts of this movie.
Oh, yeah. I think they're... I don't know. Orenishi's great, but I think Bud and L Driver are the better assassins.
Like, yeah.
I think they're the more interesting characters.
Exactly. And the bride is shown coming to Bud's trailer, and she's underneath it as he comes home from his shift at the strip club, and she's wearing a... She comes out and she's going to take Bud out.
Yeah.
We're shown earlier a scene where Bud kind of has this inkling that something's around. And so he's kind of on edge, but he's not really playing it up. But the second the bride opens the door, and I remember seeing this in theaters and I'm like, what the fuck happened? Because he blasts her with a shotgun.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like,
oh, shit.
What the fuck?
You just don't see that coming.
And I thought, like, I was like, holy, he just fucking killed her? He just shot her point blank in the chest with a shotgun.
Yeah, for the first time, you see the bride going into a fight and not having the upper hand. Like, Bud has it.
Yeah.
All the way.
And it was just, it makes more sense when he comes out and tells her that she's got 2 loads of rock salt in her tits.
Yep.
Very. And I was like, oh, so... It wasn't metal BBs that just ripped through her. It was rock salt, which would hurt like a fucker. And it blasts her back.
His plan is not to kill her quick and easy.
No, he doesn't want to. Because that's not what... He knows that L Driver doesn't want that.
No, I think it's what it is because we get the line later that says, you ripped my brother's heart out. You have every bit of this coming. I think he and Bill are closer than he lets on.
Yeah.
I think he really respects Bill, and I think he was personally offended when she did what she did later and hurt Bill.
And you get that, too, because he makes the joke that he sold the Hanzo sword that Bill gave to him. And then we find out that he didn't.
He kept it.
Yeah, of course he did. So he takes the bride, and he buries her in a grave, which is the grave of Paula Schultz, which is a throwback to Django Unchained, who is the wife of the dentist character, which is just another cool thing that, you know... It's a little throw thing. Nobody would have any idea, but I like that he eventually tied that in. So she's buried in this grave, buried alive. Then we get the scene of her training with Pai Mei.
Did we skip a scene?
What scene?
The church scene with Bill.
Yeah, well, I mean, we explained that we get to see that scene. We see what happened at the church. I talked about it briefly.
Did we mention that Samuel Jackson is the
organist?
We did not.
But you don't... That's one of the, it's like the least, you don't even see his face.
No, but you hear his voice and yeah. you know that's Samuel Jackson.
Oh yeah, absolutely. He plays Rufus, and Rufus yeah. is the man.
Right?
Yeah.
Like that's, I mean, that's worth talking about, like real quickly even. Like
it's cool. I like, I mean.
Oh, that's Rufus.
Rufus is the man. So the bride is buried alive. You know, again, we don't know how the fuck she's going to get out of this. Mm-hmm. And so, again, much like the truck scene earlier where we cut to Oren Ishii while she's working on her toes, we cut to her meeting Pai Mei and starting her training in martial arts. And Pai Mei is an ancient Chinese master. And this is where we get back into the... It's like yeah. a very 70s kung fu style thing. And it's even shot that way in that this section of the movie in flashback is very grainy.
Yeah.
And very overexposed.
It is shot like it was shot in the 70s.
Yeah.
If the Bruce Lee Game of Death outfit from Volume 1 was like a pretty obvious reference, this is even more obvious. Like, this is even more of a reference. This is very much that thing.
And we see Bill coming down from talking to Pai Mei, and Bill is bloodied up. You know, the bride asks if there was a fight, and he's like, nah, just General Pai Mei screwing around stuff. And he tells him, he warns her...
He's an ornery bastard.
Yeah, he warns her that Pai Mei kills without hesitation and alludes to this mystical mm-hmm. technique called the five-point palm exploding heart technique.
Yeah,
and
he hates Americans and even worse, girls.
And Caucasians.
Yeah, that's what it is, Caucasians.
Which is all three yep. of what the bride is. So he alludes to this technique. She asked if he taught it to Bill, and Bill says no, he doesn't teach it to anybody. Mm-hmm. Foreshadowing for later on.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, pay attention, people.
It'll come in handy. It's fun fact. So, did you know it wasn't originally supposed to happen like that?
So we learn about her being trained by Pai Mei. We don't know how long she is there, but we know it's for at least over a year. I'm thinking it's more than that because when Bill's leaving, he says, you know, it takes him at least a year to even warm up to you.
Mm-hmm.
But because of the fact that you're a Caucasian white American girl, it'll probably take longer. So we know, just based on that, that it's probably a long time. And then we get the training montage where she's shown getting better
mm-hmm.
and working with Pai Mei. And this whole time, he's having her punch a block of wood. And it starts off painful, and she's getting blisters and rips on her skin until towards the end, she's doing it just very fast. And then that cuts us back again. We're back to her in this coffin underground mm-hmm. where she has to get out. And what does she do? Pai Mei taught her to punch from 3 inches.
Yeah.
Punch very powerfully. So that's how she breaks through this coffin.
Mm-hmm.
She finds the hollow point and she starts punching. And
yeah.
we get the epic music score.
I think we should real quick talk about the way they shoot this grave stuff, because I think it's pretty incredible.
Yeah, it's very in tight and claustrophobic and
there
close.
There are. Well, there's at least like 3 or 4 minutes where the screen is completely black and all you can hear is the sound of dirt, her groaning and stuff. And it's like, that's a very bold move to not have any video for
screen.
That long.
Yeah.
And then like they also do something where it's in 2.35:1 aspect ratio, so the very wide screen. And then when she gets put in the box, the screen tightens up
very
to
cramped.
A very, very small box, so you don't get the aspect ratio. You get, like, a very small frame. You're only using, like, 30% of it. So it
yeah.
makes you feel very claustrophobic.
It's very well done. Again,
it's art. It's so
Tarantino
good.
Showing and not telling. Mm-hmm. And showing you and telling you by showing you. It's one of his...
Yeah.
It's one of the things that makes him great. So she breaks out, she digs her way out, and there's this great comedic scene where she walks into the diner across the street from the graveyard at like 3 a.m, and she's covered in dust, and she's dirty and filthy, and she just asks for a glass of water. And then we cut back, we see Elle driving this badass IROC Z as she's coming in to give Bud the money for taking out the bride. He wanted $1 million, and we see the bride see her pulling in, so we know that the bride knows that Elle and Bud are together in Bud's trailer.
Mm-hmm.
Elle gives Bud the money, and they're talking about the bride, and
how'd she go? How'd she die?
He's like, you know, which R do you feel? Remorse or regret, I think is the word.
Remorse or regret.
She says a little bit of both, and
mostly at this point, regret.
Because she didn't get to take her out.
Regret that she died at the hands of a scuzzbag piece of shit like you.
And she says this after all of the assassins have snake code names.
Mm-hmm. So Black Mamba is the bride.
Who is the... Black Mambas are the most venomous snakes in the mm-hmm. wild. They have the most potent venom, and they inject more venom per yeah. capita than any other snake. So.
And then Cottonmouth, I don't remember all of their names, but I know Bill is called the Snake Charmer.
Yeah, because he controls all of these badass women.
Mm-hmm.
So L has put a black mamba in this suitcase full of money for Bud, and it bites him 3 times as he's counting his money, and it starts to fucking kill him.
So then at that point you can say black mamba has killed all of the assassins.
Yep, and L starts taunting him, and I love that little scene, because L has a very big disdain and despise of Bud. She does not like Bud.
I don't think it's as much as she doesn't like him as much as she respects Beatrix, but also has, like, this competition rivalry with her. Like,
yeah.
She is the one who wants it done, and she's, I think, more offended just at the moment that this was not Bud's kill to take.
Yeah.
This was her kill. I think that's why.
So, as she kills Bud, she packs up the money, she's walking out, and the bride shows up and kicks her, and then we get one of my favorite fight scenes.
Right? That trailer fight.
This fight in the trailer where L is constantly trying to remove the Hanzo sword and cut the bride down. But because of the confined space of this trailer, every time she does,
she's hitting a wall or
she's
a
hitting
ceiling
a wall,
or something.
And yeah, she can't fully get this sword out.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's this great, quick, brutal fight scene where they, and again, it's a shitty trailer.
They're thrown through walls, into glass. Like, it's brutal. People are kicked in the crotches, like, real hard.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
In the shins. It's rough. It's more violent, I think, than the House of Blue Leaves scene. It's
absolutely
rough.
Yeah, it's a brutal fight, and the bride gets knocked into Bud's bedroom, where she sees that he still has his Hanzo sword in his golf bag.
Which is inscribed to Bud, the only brother I've ever loved.
The only man I've ever loved.
To the only man I've ever loved, Bill.
And so she picks that up. They're facing off in this hallway, and it's setting up that there's going to be this great, brutal, awesome sword fight.
This is, I think, the only line of dialogue that does not work, I really don't like, is when she's like, I killed Paimai. Yes, it was me. I killed your master. Like,
yeah.
I really like that. Too far, Daryl Hannah. Like, that's
But we also find out that Paimai is the one who removed one of her eyes.
Yeah.
And this whole time, Elle is shown wearing
Yeah, I don't think
we
ever mentioned, but Elle Driver only has one eye. She has an eye patch the entire time.
And it's really sexy. I will say.
I like that when she's the nurse,
it
like
has
the
red
cross. Yeah.
It's a great
touch.
Yeah.
It's so good.
So we find out that he took out her eye for being insolent. She called him an old perverted bastard.
You're an old man and a fool.
Yeah. So he removed her eye for that. And then we get this callback when they face off and they're just sword to sword pushing against each other. And the bride removes her other eye. She blinds her and just leaves her there. And it's one of, I still to this day feel bad watching the scene. I feel bad for Elle, because she's completely fucking blind there. There's no
With the black mamba in the trailer, too, which they make sure to show as Beatrix leaves.
Well, what I like about that scene is that they show the black mamba hiss at Beatrix as it walks by, but it's showing a respect. It doesn't attack her.
Yeah, it kind of pulls back, and it's
I love
just like,
that.
I'm not going to fuck with her.
It's a nice little touch, like, oh shit, even this black mamba won't fuck with her.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
It's a cool little touch. And
maybe because it senses one of its own kind.
The entire time, Elle is throwing a fit in the bathroom and tearing it apart and in a blind rage, in a literal blind rage. She's going crazy back there. So
I really like that you got in literal blind rage.
Yeah,
that was brilliant.
And it is too. So, and I just feel bad for her that she's completely blind at this point and she's stuck, and that is the end of her. Like, she doesn't kill her. She leaves her to suffer.
And that's, so we're going to just jump ahead real quick to the credits. They show like all the players and scenes from the movies, and they cross out all the people who die. And then when you get to L Driver, there's a giant question mark.
Yeah.
So it's like,
who knows?
She might still be alive.
Yeah. So we cut to now the bride has finally removed everybody from the equation except for Bill. She has gotten her revenge on them all.
Mm-hmm.
There's only one left. He's down in Mexico or South America somewhere. So we're shown these scenes, and she comes up to the old retired pimp.
Esteban.
Who was a father figure to Bill. And I love the way that he says his name. He calls him Ebiel. And
the way that dude smokes, too, is just so badass and effortless. Like, he's cool, but he is not even trying. Like,
again,
he wakes up and fucking does
exactly
this.
Like the way that Johnny Depp makes me want to smoke cigarettes when I watch Fear and Loathing. Because it looks so fucking cool when he's doing it. You want to talk to me about a bee? And so it's just,
it's pretty good. It's a pretty close impression.
Yeah,
it's,
I like that scene.
Really
I like
good.
That character. And
I
again,
do too. It's one of the scenes, like in any other movie, it's like, it doesn't need to be there. It's just extra stuff. But like, when you put Michael Parks in it, when you let him do Esteban, like that accent, everything, it's like, I am completely enraptured.
And it works because, you know, the bride's kind of flirtatious with him.
Mm-hmm.
And she knows that that'll help her, but
he's also very aware of the game she's playing.
Yeah.
And he's...
She wants to know where Bill is. Mm-hmm. And he tells her, and he's like, do you know why I'm telling you where Bill is? And she's like, no. Why? And he's like, because Bill would want me to tell you. That's the only reason he's doing it, again, because it's something that Bill wants.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nobody goes against Bill in this movie except for the bride. So we're finally shown, she gets to, he tells her that he's at some cabana, resort, hotel mm-hmm. sort of thing. And we get there and we finally see Bill. She breaks into this place and she has her gun drawn.
Wait, you get the...
She rounds the corner and Bill is there with their daughter.
Which there is a literal sound effect like yeah. that as soon as you see the daughter too.
She knows that her daughter, this whole time she's thought her daughter is dead.
Mm-hmm.
She finds out that she's not, she's alive.
Well, we don't, because at the end of Volume 1, Bill says, does she yeah. know that her daughter is still alive? And then that's the end of Volume 1. So we know that, but she doesn't know it.
Yeah, again, to show off the great acting of Uma Thurman, you can tell that this has an impact on her.
It just fucking wrenches her.
Yeah, it wrecks her. She starts crying and weeping.
But I love, like, so you get all of that within the span of a few seconds, because Bill and BB, her kid, are playing guns, and she shoots her mom. She's like, I got you, mommy. And she's, like, dealing with this, like, oh my god, my kid's still alive, like, all these emotions. And then immediately, like, she goes, and she grabs herself like she got shot, and then immediately starts playing with
yeah.
the kid. And I'm like, that's such a great, like, that's a great way to do that. That's a great way to handle that. Like, you wouldn't see that in any other movie.
And it's not cheesy. It
no.
works. It's really well done. Mm-hmm. And again, it plays to Tarantino and to Uma Thurman mm-hmm. and the way that they work in this movie. And
we David Carradine, who's Bill.
Exactly.
Even just with, like, the first minute of game telling, you're like, this guy's fucking amazing.
David Carradine, you know, I'd only really known him from Kung Fu, but man, he's really fucking good.
I only know him from this. In all honesty, I never saw Kung Fu.
I used to watch Kung Fu as a kid. So.
Ooh.
What's great is that, much like the Vernita Green scene, the bride is not going to do anything to Bill while her daughter is around.
Mm-hmm.
So we get this amicable sort of cooperation
mm-hmm.
where they're not going to do anything, but you can tell this animosity is playing through. The bride is not happy to be around Bill, so mm-hmm. it's very cool.
Until she tries, and he shoots the TV, and then ends up shooting her with a truth serum
yep.
as he gives a monologue.
Which is a great monologue, and he breaks down the Superman character.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to get too deep into it. It is my favorite speech in the movie.
I would say you owe it, because you did promise this when we were talking about Batman Superman.
Okay, so I did. So he talks about how all of the superheroes are different from Superman
mm-hmm.
and the fact that their secret identities are the superheroes,
mm-hmm.
whereas Superman's secret identity is Clark Kent. He always wakes up as Superman. He will always be Superman.
Yeah.
He puts on the costume to become Clark Kent, who is weak.
His interpretation of us. It's
yeah,
a parody.
Yeah. He was weak. He's inferior. He's scared. And that's how Superman sees us as human beings. I love that speech yeah. and that scene.
And that would have been Beatrix had she married Tommy Plimpton and had the baby. She would have been
She would
Superman
always be Superman.
Clark Kent.
Exactly.
She'd be Clark Kent forever after that. And
yeah.
he couldn't let her do that.
Yeah. yeah. Which
explains everything you need to know. It gets in like a nice little Superman speech. I love this scene.
It's one of my favorites.
My wife does not like it.
Really?
She hates it.
Oh, man.
Right? I know. I was like, I can't. You. That's a good scene. Like, it's so
needed.
It's
one of the best.
It's
yeah.
needed.
It's a great monologue, and I'm not even a monologue fan, but that's great.
I am.
he's laying it out to her. Yeah. And I'll be honest, this was the turning point in my love affair of Superman, too, was seeing this movie. And
okay.
that's what really started me to see Superman in a whole new light.
Yeah.
And Superman is growing into one of my favorite comic characters now, so.
Okay.
So then, you know, again, we get to the inevitable conclusion where they're talking and they have this, it's a really cool fight scene where they're seated at a table yeah. and it goes very quickly.
I don't think either of them ever stand up from their chairs.
No.
And it's just real quick, like 1 minute fight scene. Very,
yeah.
very quick and to the point.
And the bride performs the 5-point palm exploding heart technique onto mm-hmm. Bill. And Bill immediately knows that he's been bested. And
he taught you?
And she says, of course he did. The thing with the 5-point palm exploding heart technique is that after it's performed on you, you live until you take 5 steps.
And your heart explodes.
Once you take 5 steps, your heart explodes. So Bill knows he's bested, knows he's going to die, mm-hmm. and the bride does too, and she starts to cry, but happily, yeah. Cause she has reached her end, and Bill stands up and buttons his jacket, says, "How do I look?" And she's
ready.
She says, "Ready," and he turns around and bravely, I love this scene too, David Carradine doesn't pause. When he starts walking, he takes those 5 deliberate steps and then falls over. And that's the end of Bill.
He never turns back, he never gives anything else.
He never even pauses in like his walk. Yeah. He knows, he's like, "I'm just going to take these 5 steps and that's going to be it."
Yeah, real quick, I'm going to interject and we'll wrap this up.
Yeah.
But that final scene... My wife bought me, like, for Christmas a few years ago, like, the original Kill Bill script signed and everything.
Wow.
And I know, it's an awesome gift. And the last scene was actually, he says something in the movie of the lens of, we'll clash swords at sunset out, like, this is a great view and everything.
Out on the beach.
That was the end.
Oh.
In the original script.
A big fight on the beach?
There was a fight on the beach, and they were clashing swords. And it was fine in the script, but I think I prefer the movie one.
It works way better here,
yeah. Because
yeah.
It's an emotional thing more than an action scene.
Mm-hmm.
But
and
yeah, originally they were going to do it on the beach, just like that.
And so, and you know, to bring this to the cap in the end, the mm-hmm. bride originally ran away from Bill when she was pregnant because she didn't want her daughter raised in the environment that mm-hmm. she was brought up in. She didn't want her to be yeah. another assassin for Bill.
She says a very telling thing. She said, "Why'd you do it? I'm scared.
Yeah.
I was scared for my baby." And
that's
the only time you ever see her being scared.
She wanted a clean slate for her daughter. Mm-hmm. And so she does eventually get that after she kills Bill. She runs away with her daughter to raise her as she sees fit mm-hmm. away from this monster of a man. So
yes.
It's a great conclusion. It's a happy ending, which is not something that happens very yeah. often in a Tarantino.
The final line is, "A lioness has returned to her cub."
Which is a playoff of the wolf and Wolf and Cub
mm-hmm.
Movie, which is a great another Japanese sword samurai
yeah.
movie. So it's... Wolf and Cub, I think, is the name, now that I'm thinking of it.
And then the credits are great. Like, these are... I don't watch credits ever.
I watched all these,
like,
too.
I
yeah.
say at, like, the Marvel ones to see, like, the teaser at the end, but, like, the songs they pick, like, the Malaguena Celerosa,
yeah.
like, the Mexican song as they're giving the words, and then, like, the credits, Urami Burushi, the Japanese, like, I will watch them every single time.
Yep, I did too, buddy.
And I never do that for any other movie, yep. but, yeah, they're great.
What I like, too, is that these are the real credits. After you watch... Volume 1, it has credits, but this is the conclusory credits.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just fucking great, man.
Agreed.
Good point. Now, I do have one question as the conclusion.
Yes.
And that is, out of everything, why is this your favorite Tarantino?
I think it hit me at just the right time in my life.
Okay.
As I said, it was, like I said, it's the only, or not the only, it was the first Tarantino film I saw in a theater. Pulp Fiction, Reservoir Dogs, Jackie Brown, I all saw on my computer because my parents allowed me to watch it, but they didn't care about them enough to watch it, so they're like, "Here you go." And my only venue was on a little 20-inch TV or monitor or whatever. But I think the style is fantastic. I love the references. Like, this means more to me, speaking about, like, 70s action films and all this stuff, more or Kung Fu films, instead of, like, gangster movies. Because, like, when I'm 14, 15, like, how many gangster crime movies have I seen that, like...
True enough.
It feels like a revolution, because I'm not as familiar when they came out. I think if I was older and I saw Pulp Fiction, maybe that would have hit me more. But this hit me at the exact right time it needed to.
Cool. Okay.
I think
that answered my question.
I think that's why.
I do love this movie. It's not my favorite
Boners
Tarantino.
Boners for Uma.
Yeah.
Hashtag boners for Uma.
It's not my favorite Tarantino. I float back and forth. I really come back to Pulp Fiction a lot, too. Pulp
yeah.
Fiction is such a good one.
I think any of those three right there, Pulp Fiction, Jackie Brown, and Kill Bill, I think are all fantastic.
Yeah.
Like, that's the best. Like, I still really like Django and Inglourious, but those three I think are his best.
Cool. So, yeah, I totally agree.
Mm-hmm. Great. So,
As I said when we did the list, I'm so glad that you had a Tarantino. Knowing you,
yeah.
Anyways, I knew you would have a Tarantino on your list. I'm glad to know that it was this one.
It was just a question of which one it would
mm-hmm.
be.
Kill Bill does have a big place in my heart because I did see it. We are the same age. It hit me at the same time where I was just coming into really appreciating Kung Fu and really appreciating Westerns.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a big Western guy. I know you're not, per
I'm
se.
Not,
You've
no.
not been exposed
yeah.
to a lot of them.
Yeah.
So, but I had, and I was really starting to hit that niche, so this hit a lot of those elements mm-hmm. for me, too.
Especially all those classic Western themes that Tarantino uses.
So, yeah, great choice, man. Great choice for number 2.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I love it.
I like that we both had very kung fu heavy number twos. Yeah.
This is one of those movies that you don't want to watch with me because I will sit there and I'm going to say every single line as it's being said and I'm a nightmare to watch this movie.
I'm that way with The Matrix. So again, yeah. We're so fucking similar. It's great.
Yeah.
So, great movie.
Yeah, in conclusion, it's a fantastic movie. Yep. If you haven't seen it, watch it. But
I don't know anybody who hasn't.
I'm sure you've seen it.
You should watch it. If you haven't in a long time, watch it again. They are both on Netflix.
Yeah, I think they still both hold up very well.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I'm biased, but I still think they're
pretty, I'm not as biased solid. As you, and I would agree. They hold up very well. They're very, very watchable. So, why don't you take us out here, buddy?
So, that was an episode of The Experience Grind where we talked about Kill Bill Volume 1. Next week, we will be talking about Kyle's number one game, which is...
Final Fantasy VII.
Number two game. I'm sorry.
Are we into number two?
We haven't finished Shadow of the Colossus.
Oh, we'll
be talking
two
about
games.
Shadow of the Colossus next week.
Yeah, we're ahead.
And then Punch Drunk is after that.
Yeah, we're on number two games, number one movies. So
we will be doing Shadow of the Colossus, which is a PlayStation 2 classic that you must play. We are The Experience Grind. I have been Ryan.
I've been Kyle.
Please catch us on Facebook at Experience Grind Podcast. Go to Twitter. We are, what is our Twitter, Mr.?
It's EXP Grind Podcast.
There you go.
That's not Experience Grind. That was already taken.
Yeah, you're pretty much running the Twitter, so you know better than I do.
Yeah.
And then feel free to send us an email at experiencegrindpodcast@gmail.com.
Yeah.
We love reading your reactions, and we're actually going to be reading probably some of them. We'll be mentioning them at least in our Star Wars stuff. But
yeah,
please keep adding your thoughts and opinions. Love to hear it.
It's good stuff, and we appreciate you guys. We have seen a great uptick in the outreach from you, and we would only encourage it. And the one thing that I would say, I don't know when this episode will come out, but when it does, you people that are our core listeners, if you have people you know that you think would enjoy it, please. Please share us with them. We want to increase our listenership.
Absolutely.
I think right now we are getting a good rate. We're almost at 80 likes on our Facebook.
Yeah.
I would like to get that up to 100 before year's end. If we
I
can
think
do
that's
that,
a doable goal.
If we can do that, that'll be great. That is a goal. So please, let people know about us. You would know better than we would who would like us. So. Yeah.
And after our top fives, we're going to have open time for video games and movies both. So if there's something you want us to talk about or experience, let us know. We just might.
Thank you, guys. Thank you for listening, as always. And we'll catch you on the next time.
#bonus for Uma.